Hi, I'm with Lynn Preston. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
So, do you want to maybe start by telling us a bit about how you got to create focusing-oriented relational therapy?
Oh, yes. Well, it seems like I've been creating it in a way my whole adult life.
Hmm.
I had met Jane Genlin in my early career in the 70s when I was a young beginning therapist. I had had a lot of different kinds of training and just came upon him quite by accident and immediately was drawn to his approach that felt like a homecoming. It felt like what he was presenting was at that time was about listening. In the beginning, he was just developing focusing, actually.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of listening that leads into focusing. And my immediate response to it was, this is what I've needed. This is what brings all of the things that I've studied together.
Mm-hmm.
This is what underlies the whole therapeutic process. And so I got together a training group that Gene led, and I did personal therapy with him while he was in New York, and have been teaching that those underlying principles and ideas and ways of being with and getting at that deep undercurrent of process ever since that time.
Yeah. So what you're describing is that when you first had this contact with Gene, there was a sense of deep personal resonance with what you were looking for, in a way, something you hadn't quite articulated, but you knew you were looking for. And something resonated with that.
Yes, absolutely. There was a kind of clicking in, and not only a resonating, but a sense of illumination.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, here's something that is so right that I've been overlooking.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought of it this way, or I never saw this before.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people and therapists find that in the focusing work, that sense of rightness and that sense of, oh, yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that from that point on, it influenced your approach.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then later on, what I wanted was more about the therapy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of psychoanalysis as representing that, with the emphasis on transference and countertransference. But I had to wait until psychoanalysis sort of broadened out. At the beginning, it was very difficult for me to connect with the language and with the culture of psychoanalysis. But as it began to change and Cohut became more in style, and other more relational developments in psychoanalysis, I began to engage with psychoanalytic thinking, and eventually went into psychoanalysis and psychoanalytic training, and found in that what I had been looking for about the amazing power of the therapy relationship and all of the ins and outs and ups and downs of that therapy journey, and what that particular kind of partnership has to offer that's really different than any other kind of relationship that we have in our lives or in our culture.
Yeah. So do you want to maybe talk a little more about, this partnership, or this therapeutic partnership, this relationship, and what happens?
Yes. I'm thinking back on the article that I wrote, The Two Interwoven Miracles. And then recently, Jean and I have been saying, well, it's really not two miracles. There's one miracle, right? It's not two interwoven miracles, but there's one miracle of what we would call focusing as relationality.
Mm-hmm.
But in thinking back on that article, I'm thinking about the amazing experience of focusing, which has to do with being listened to and having a space made and having something that I'm trying to say, that I'm trying to get at, that I don't know what it is myself,
mm-hmm.
having that pointed at and made a space for, and how that bubbles up when it's called for and invoked and welcomed in a way that would never come in that same way without that space being made for it, without that pointing.
Mm-hmm. So that first miracle is that space where being listened to makes space for something to emerge.
Yes, and it's a particular kind of listen to it. Listening for that deep undercurrent that opens out. It's listening for that implicit meaning that's trying to emerge. And that's very different than attentive listening to the story, which is also important,
uh-huh.
or attentive listening to even the emotion. It's listening to that felt meaning.
Yeah. So even just as you describe it, there's a sense of how listening can be listening to different things, and that this is the attunement of what is about to emerge and the possibility that there is something about to emerge.
Yes. That was... I like that reflection. I think reflection is so important. When you said that, it made me think of a statement of Jean that I refer often to, especially with new students that I'm introducing to the philosophy of the implicit and focusing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Jean's statement that every bit of human experience has a forward movement implicit in it.
Mm.
I just love that.
Yeah, so every moment in the therapy relationship or in the focusing relationship, that this awareness at every moment has an implicit waiting to unfold.
Yes, it has an implicit forward movement inherent in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that idea that the forward movement, the opening out of meaning, the life forward steps are inherent in the experience. And
mm-hmm.
so the listener is listening for that.
Yeah.
And that when the listener listens for that, it actually facilitate the emergence of this new, the new words, the new metaphor, the new image, the new thought, the new step, the new meaning, the broader understanding.
So in a way, we're in a part of something that's very central about the sense of both action and process being intertwined and feeding each other.
Yes. Absolutely. And then the other miracle, this miracle of the therapy relationship, has to do with my experience in psychoanalysis of being invited as a patient to say all of the fears and needs and apprehensions and hopes and observations having to do with the relationship itself, and being a new freer person in relationship as a result of that. That invitation to be whatever one needs to be in relationship, and to have the other willing to respond to those hopes and fears and needs, that's something that we rarely experience in life.
Mm-hmm.
That experience of having the commitment be to hang in there with all of it, and to have all of oneself welcomed, and to have the therapist really seeking to meet you and to engage with you on whatever level comes from that implicit place. That's an amazing thing.
So that, unlike other relationships in life, it is one where it is possible and actually good to reflect on what's happening in the relationship, and to voice reactions and to examine that.
Mm-hmm. And to have it be welcomed and met by the therapist, not only voiced, but wanted. Something about it being wanted.
Yeah, so welcomed and met, wanted, so there's a sense of presence of two human beings, very present.
Yes, that's right. I think that in most interactions, most relationships, including the therapy relationship, but we're sort of working on that. But in most relationships, there's a kind of code of what isn't allowed to be said. And one implicitly understands that code and doesn't cross over that line. And so all of the feelings of wishing for more responsiveness, or different kind of responsiveness, or disappointments, or annoyances, or dependencies, or any of the other human feelings are sort of kept out of most interactions. And in a relational therapy, even when the client isn't voicing those reactions, the therapist is welcoming them and aware of them, and there's a kind of understanding that everything is included and invited, and everything is part of it. And even if it's not being talked about, we know that all of that, those struggles of relating are there,
yeah,
and in the work.
Yeah, so the struggles of relating are very much present in the room.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So you can see, I think, as I'm talking about these two miracles, how they are one unit,
mm-hmm,
how they are two sides of the same coin. Because as we dip into the implicit realm, as we dip into what we are not quite able to say but is known and there, what Christopher Golis calls the unthought known, that is all permeated, shot through with relationality.
Mm-hmm.
When we go deep inside ourselves, we go deep in and out, and it encompasses that inside, encompasses the other person that I'm focusing with or that I'm in therapy with, and it encompasses all the people in my life that I'm close to, and it encompasses my history and my culture and my language and perhaps generations of the experience of people in my family.
Mm-hmm.
It goes way out there, and all of that is in the implicit of what I'm saying. So there is no real division between inside and outside.
But that's a very beautiful image, what you're describing, that all of what has happened, all of the generations and all of the experiences are really so intensely present at that moment. So there's a sense of the moment actually very charged with a lot of implicit possibilities from, it really gives me a sense of a very, very rich moment.
Yes, that's right. And I think that's one of the things that's so exciting about this way of thinking about therapy, that every moment is thick, as Jean would say, is rich with all of this in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we are experiencing all of it, even though we couldn't put all of it into words. There's a whole self-sense that includes everything in the moment of dipping into the implicit.
Mm-hmm.
That self-sense has all of that in it, this holistic nature.
Yeah. So that's about increasing or training or that ability we have to sense all that is present in the moment, and including those dimensions.
Yes, and they don't. All of those, of course, could never be explicated.
Mm-hmm.
But I love this idea that we work with in focusing, that the self sense is pinpointed precisely to illuminate some very specific word, image, meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the felt sense is this very large opening out thing. So it has both this pinpointing of that point of emergence, of if we picture a whole ocean, but there's this little point in
mm-hmm.
the ocean where the fish is emerging from.
Right.
Right? So we know how to go to that point, but we also recognize this whole ocean there.
Yeah, so that little point and the whole ocean at the same time.
Yes. So everything is relational.
Mm-hmm. So I know that it's difficult to give specific examples of what happens because you don't want to talk about what happens with clients. But is there maybe some example that you could give about an experience of this double miracle?
Let's see. I think about a supervisee who talked about a very difficult session in which her client had been in a pizza store with his friend, and this gunman walked in the door and shot the friend in front of his eyes, and the client was telling his therapist this story in a very detached way, and the therapist was practically bowled over by the story.
Mm-hmm.
God, what must that be like, and how is that, and it becoming very difficult for the therapist to even know how to respond to this, especially when the client wasn't in any way emotional about it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we were talking about in this group supervision is how when there is no felt sense from the client is not having a felt sense of it really in the detachment. There's a need to separate from the experience. So there isn't that feeling of a rich, what Jean calls coming from underneath,
mm-hmm.
which is a phrase I love. You know, the idea that when the process is a felt sense process, this coming from underneath feeling.
Yeah.
But when that isn't there, that one can still, as a therapist, point to and be evocative about the felt meaning that the client is trying to express, the crux of what the client is trying to express.
Mm-hmm.
So if the therapist says something about the client is saying, I can't imagine this, what it must be like for this guy to just be standing there ready to get his pizza and to see this gun pointed at him.
Mm-hmm.
And the client is saying, I can't imagine, you know, what would bring this gunman to this moment of just reaching into, you know, his pocket and pulling out a gun and shooting somebody, a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were saying that the reflection that's the crux of it would be, you can't encompass this. There's no way you can get your mind around this. This is beyond comprehension. Those kinds of reflections that are reflections of what the client is trying to say, trying to get at, also give the sense of the permission for this whole stunned, shocked reaction.
Yeah. Yeah. So even in a case where the client cannot really be in touch with the felt sense, there's this evocative reflection that the therapist finds a way to bring up.
That's right. And that evocative reflection is orienting for the therapist when the therapist loses the track, because it gives the therapist something, some center of saying, how can I get at the crux of what's trying to be said here?
Mm-hmm.
And it gives the client the sense of being really heard and heard from the point of view of what hasn't exactly been said,
yeah.
but has been communicated. So there's a sense of the two being together.
Yeah, and you used a phrase that sounds very simple, but in fact there's a lot happening. You say the therapist is asking, how can I be at the crux of what's happening there?
Mm-hmm.
So there's something about that whole relationality between them, maybe the sensing, the feeling, you know, the lack of emotion, but there's got to be a lot happening in that
yes.
little moment.
Yes, that's right. That the implicit is rich with all that's happening, even what's happening, even the distance that the person may need to take from the experience that's being described.
Right.
And even that distance is welcome.
Right. So at that moment, there's all that has happened outside, and there's all that's happening between the therapist and the client, including the distance.
Yes, exactly.
So,
oh, one more thing I could say about that is a quote from Kohut, the founder of self-psychology, is that what's curative is to feel deeply understood, for the patient to feel deeply understood. And I think that dovetails with our focusing work beautifully, because when we say deeply understood, that encompasses this whole implicit dimension, that somebody could feel understood, but to feel deeply understood means that the therapist needs to be in touch with her own self-sense of the client, and of the client's self-sense, and of the client's situation. And if the client doesn't have a self-sense, the self-sense that would be there if it were, you know, if the client was in touch with it. So that sense of feeling deeply understood, I think, is at the heart both of a psychoanalytic relational understanding and also of a focusing understanding of the process.
So that's very much related to that double miracle.
Yes, right.
And as you've talked about this, we're being very attuned to the process of what's happening, but there is also this awareness of the forward movement being implicit. So do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, the interaction philosophically between the process, the change, action, felt sense?
This whole idea of forward movement and what that is, and that our work really hinges on that. I was just reading something today by Donald Stern that refers to that that implicit self-meaning as a something in mind, that when somebody is spontaneously talking, there's something always beyond the words. There's something in mind, but that in mind may not be in consciousness. We may not be aware of it. We actually don't even know what the next thing is that we're going to say, which can be very scary in an interview.
Yeah.
Don't know what to think about of yourself. Right? But there's something in mind, but we don't know it. And then there's a process in focusing about touching into that something in mind.
Touching into that something in mind,
And there's a practice that's very specifically able to be taught to touch into that something in mind, both for the focuser or the client and for the listener or the therapist. And there's a very tight, close link in the focusing world between philosophy and theory and practice there. That we experience this miracle, as I put it, of the something in mind that can actually be touched. And that opens out to a whole philosophy. Genlin actually started with that. What is it, he asked himself. How did the philosophers come to creating all of these beautiful patterns of thinking in philosophy? How did they dip into the larger realm at the edge of thinking, was his word. How does that happen? And that was the beginnings of the philosophy of the implicit. How does that happen? The way Genlin puts it is that it's obvious that the client is working with more than words and concepts in therapy. That it's obvious that there's a process happening that is far beyond the words and the concepts, far beyond what we're saying. So there's a way in which when we practice that touching the something in mind, it opens out to the theory and to the philosophy. And when we study the philosophy, we can see the link to the very specific minute details of practice there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I wonder if that's what you were actually asking.
Yeah, very much so. Just it feels, actually my reaction is that what you're describing and the way you're describing it gives me a sense of something that is actually beyond, you know, the categories of words and concepts, because it's touching, you know, it's dealing with them at another dimension. Where things become possible that are not, you know, when we stay within the preordained categories.
Yes, that's a beautiful way to say it. That and that would bring me to the thought about how Genlin's use of language is quite different. That for many contemporary thinkers, language is something that is supposed to represent experience and compresses experience into these little units and detracts and imprisons experience, so that what we get is this pale, unsatisfying, watered-down version of the vast processes of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that Genlin looks at it is that, oh no, it's not like that. It's not that the words just imprison and water down the experience, but the words, finding the words that have this fit, that have the experiential, what I call the experiential ring of truth, that sense of, yes, that's the right word or the right image.
Mm-hmm.
Those words are have the function of opening out the experience further and bringing other dimensions of it into consciousness. So it is not only about capturing experience, but it's about furthering experience. It actually is the forward movement.
Yeah.
That zigzag that we talk about of going, dipping into the wordless, the beyond words, and then finding something that can touch it, that can bring it alive, that can meet it.
And that's where we come back to the relational, is because the words don't exist in and of themselves, but there's the process of people using words to try and grasp an experience.
Yes, exactly. So the words are also a way of connecting to another person.
Mm-hmm.
And the beyond words is always between the people, not only linking the symbolic and the sub-symbolic, so to speak,
right,
but also linking the people who are being together in trying to use the word.
Yeah. So that sounds like a nice way to conclude this.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prangle. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.